produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Joseph Cottrell and Ken Fuller. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 625, our favourite Peter Banks era songs.
Hey everybody, it's Jay Schellen here, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 625 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulryan, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a few minutes. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, Mark and I attempted to choose three Peter Banks-era Yes songs each. As you'll hear, we turned out to be thinking along similar lines, but it was still a very enjoyable experience listening to the earliest days of the band and discussing what made Yes unique, even at that stage. This topic was partly in response to a tweet, or ex-post, or whatever they're now called, from Phil, that's at primarily underscore prog, who posted a photo of Time and a Word and said, "I seldom hear it mentioned, yet the interplay between Banks, Bruford, Squire and Kay is quite something, and John's voice to top it off." So, thank you, Phil, for prompting us this week. It's also been a very busy week for Yes themselves and on the socials. On the YMP Facebook discussion group, Doug Curran posted the following list of items. A happy birthday to Benoit David. Steve Howe and Jay Schellen doing their duty for the hash Ask Yes series. Photos of his copy of the latest Yes Record Store Day release. That's the Yale Bowl 1971, which was also shown off by John Pickles. A YouTube profile of Harry Whitley, who will be singing and playing bass with Asia on their July US tour. A poster for that forthcoming tour that sees Asia share the stage with Focus, Martin Turner from Wishbone Ash, and Curved Air. News that Adam Wakeman will be touring with Uriah Heep as guest keyboardist. And news that Bill Bruford is eager to attend the Harvest Moon June Festival in Toledo in September. Details on the VIP package for the upcoming Asia tour and a John Anderson post pointing out that it's just 5 weeks until he goes on tour with the Band Geeks. Jeffrey Mason added a video from March of Richie Castellano talking about John Anderson and the Band Geeks, their tour and new album. A handbill for quite the September 1966 lineup of bands at The Place in Hanley, which is in Stoke-on-Trent, including The Warriors featuring John Anderson. Billy Sherwood and Steve Howe recent interviews. An ICYMI, in case you missed it. Omega Auctions had some stellar master tape and multitrack collectibles up for auction that were all consigned by the family of Chris Squire. Kevin Furbank talking about his book 1972, When Progressive Rock Ruled the World, on the Booked on Rock podcast. A ton of great coverage of Deep Purple before their tour with Yes in the May 2024 edition of Classic Rock magazine. Chris Squire and Steve Howe interviewed for Argentina's Revisto Pelo in 1976. Brilliant photos of Yes on tour in support of Close to the Edge on Tuesday, October the 3rd, 1972 in North Carolina. A photo of Steve Howe playing with Yes at the Rainbow Theatre, December 1972, and a photo of the 2002 Yes lineup. Stephen Schinder shared the latest Yes shift celebration. This time it's for Benoit David's birthday, and Mark Bradford Barber added a link to the audience recording of a Yes concert from a Tormato tour show at Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens on April the 20th, 1979, which features a very rare Close to the Edge. Hector Salvador Plaza shared photos of Yes in concert in 1977 and 78, and Paul Hales gave his opinion on the forthcoming Deep Purple and Yes tour. Jilly Goodnews added a really fun video of Billy Sherwood playing with a camera attached to the headstock of his fretless bass, and Ray Reithmeyer shared the poster for the Asia tour with a little sadness that Mark Bonilla is not included in the lineup this time. John Perez posted the fascinating 1978 Yes stage plot and rider, and Stephen Sullivan added his thoughts on the latest YMP episode. In terms of coverage of the warm-up concert Yes have just done last night, as I record this, in Tavistock, Devon, Chris Berry was there and showed off a photo. Danny Wilde met Billy and Jeff in the car park, and Dave Watkinson contributed lots of other photos. I've enjoyed the little clips of the band rehearsing that Yes Official have posted, so I do hope they will do more of that. Sounds like everyone had a great time at the concert, and I also received this review from Stefano Mazzeo. He says, yes, concert mini review, Tavistock, England, 25th of April, 2024. Once again, I find myself venturing over the border from God's own country, that's Cornwall, into Devon to see a Yes concert. And in what must be a fantastic coup for this pretty little Devon town, Tavistock, the Wharf Theatre have managed to get Yes to stage their latest tour warm-up show there. I'm not going to mention any of the songs or the set list. If you want to know that, then you can go to ForgottenYesterdays.com, where it is in full. But Stefano continued, after starting with fantastic renditions of two songs, Yes kept up a quality performance throughout, led by their indomitable maestro Steve Howe. And there were great performances by all. Billy Sherwood shone throughout the concert, as he did here 2 years ago, and together with Jay Schellen have become the beating heart of Yes. Jeff Downes has become the Yes keyboardist, and a great show from him, especially on the opener, where his unique style came to the fore. However, it must be said that John Davison's faultless, ethereal vocals now make him the best Yes vocalist ever, in my opinion. I'd recommend any Yes fan go to see a show this year, even one headed by Deep Purple, who must be worried they are going to be upstaged by a better band. So thank you to Stefano and everyone who has been in touch in any way this week, including those who left extensive and very interesting comments on the show notes for last week's episode. That was Michael J. Quartella, Doug Curran, Aaron Steelman, Ian MB, Guy de Rome, and Charles Nally.
Yes Music Podcast, 12 True Summers.
Here we are on episode 625, talking about our favourite Peter Banks era songs. So going right back to the beginning of the band, Mark is with me. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Hello, Kevin. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Thank you. What about you?
Good. It's a beautiful, clear day. I can't believe it. Like, not a cloud in the sky, but Mother Nature's playing tricks with us. It's only 1 degree Celsius for some reason.
Oh, right. Yes, it's sort of clear here and a bit cloudy as well, but it is freezing cold, so that's certainly true. I like your reference to time and a word with clear days there. Well done. That's very good. That starts us off in the right way.
Yes.
Yes, we're talking about the beginning of the band, 1968 to 70, really, because those are the two records, Yes and Time and a Word, in 1970, the second of those, that Peter Banks was with the band. And that's after the second album that he was told to go and take his guitar elsewhere by the rest of the band, I think. So what we've done is chosen three songs, whether they are live songs only or whether they're contained within Time and a Word or Yes, the first 1969 album, and we're going to have a chat about those. One thing I would say about this process, Mark, this is one of my favourite things that we do, because I get to spend some time with a very small number of Yes songs and listen to them very intently. And I did notice things when doing this week that I'd forgotten about or didn't realise.
Yes.
So let's start off then, Mark. What's your first song from that era that you really, really like?
Well, it's interesting because I was listening to them again, and to be quite honest, I listened to these early records quite a bit. I'm a fan of the early stuff, and I'm a fan of Peter Banks' stuff. I do have quite a bit of his solo records and his stuff with Flash as well.
Yeah.
So I am aware of Peter's stuff and his styles and, you know, techniques. The thing that I enjoyed and the first song that I picked is right from the very beginning, Beyond and Before.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, I think that song, while it's a great indicator of Chris Squire early, because he does start off the song with his, you know, bass guitar there, there's a lot of these little guitar licks and stuff that he does in the verses and stuff like that that's very descriptive of how he plays. He has this blues influence in him, and he's very more rock and rollish than I find than Steve Howe. That's the one thing about this era that I liked. Is that Steve Howe has kind of the more jazzy, clean guitar tones going on in his records. And while Peter Banks is very much more, you know, the Marshall amplifiers and a little bit more overdriven and a little bit more rock and roll sounding. So whenever I'm in the mood for, you know, some good old rock and roll, but in the style of Yes, you know, then there's no better record to go to than the first one. The debut is fantastic when it comes to that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. And Yes, and I generally choose, I haven't chosen that one this time, but I do generally choose Beyond and Before because I love that song and I love the way that it starts off the recorded output of Yes, and that's the first thing you hear is this blistering track. And that's one word that I found myself thinking quite a bit when thinking about these Peter Banks days, was the blistering nature of it, the sheer energy and wild abandon that you get, not just through this record, but also through the select live recordings that we've got. And you could tell that even though he was doing something rocky, the whole band were pushing to do new things and to do different things. And I think there's an awful lot to be said for this early period. But the first one that I went for was Every Little Thing. And the reason, there are a few reasons for this. And it's because I do love those earliest cover versions that the band used to do. And Every Little Thing strikes me that sometimes it gets overlooked. And it is on that first album. And I think it's a brilliant version on there. Really, when people think of Yes's cover versions, the first one that comes to mind would be America, which is a remarkable thing and amazing. But before Steve Howe took that and made it his own, there was this Every Little Thing, which is the Beatles number. And that's one of the things I like about this cover, is that the Beatles are one of their key influences. And members of the Beatles even famously were at the Marquee Club and around London in those days when Yes were just forming, and definitely saw at least Steve Howe, if not several of the other members of the band, playing in those early days. I'm sure they did. And it must have been such an amazing time to be around the London music scene. And all those Beatles connections that we've got, Alan White playing on the John Lennon and the Harrison albums and playing live with the Plastic Ono Band and all that. And Every Little Thing itself was one of the first things that came to the attention of pop music listeners within the UK, because it was played on John Peel. And this was a session version, so you can get it on the BBC Sessions, Yes. There's various different titles of that album, aren't there, the BBC Sessions. And they played this Every Little Thing on the 12th of January 1969. And that struck me as amazing, because they were doing a cover version of a current band at that stage, because, of course, the Beatles hadn't split up by then. And in fact, when it was played on the 12th of January 1969, that was a day before Yellow Submarine was released. And yes, the last ever Beatles concert on the roof of Apple Records was at the end of that same month. So it's really got quite a significance, because the Beatles were still the biggest band in the world at the time that this Every Little Thing cover was being put together. And like you, I think this has got a lot of the mayhem of those earliest concerts. And I think the recording of this song is actually rather good on the first album. It does sound quite live. They've certainly managed to transfer a lot of the energy of their live show at the time through into this. And I love the way that they've expanded it. And that's one of the things that one of their hallmarks. They weren't the only band doing this at the time, but they certainly managed to explore and amplify and make it longer, but not just longer, adding their own unique stamp onto this. I mean, it's 5 minutes and 42 seconds long, this version, much longer than the original Beatles, I think. But a couple of the things that I like about it are the amazing Squire rasping bass and Bruford improvised sounding, but also the jazz influences as well from Banks in there. So there's a combination of that, as you were saying, that rock and roll playing from him, but also some jazz influences being thrown around there as well. And I love the way that they quote from the Beatles as well. So you've got the Day Tripper, little bit of Day Tripper riff coming in from Peter Banks. I think it's Peter Banks, or it could be Squire. And in fact, on the Top Gear with John Peel, that's the BBC session, has a snippet of Norwegian Wood as well. So I absolutely love the way that they do this, and they throw in some minor keys and things. And it's just such a fiesta, isn't it? It's such a fun cover version.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting to listen to them. I mean, one of the things that, as you just mentioned, that they did early on was take a cover and make it very much their own. I mean, yeah. One thing that you mentioned that I thought was important to bring up was that some of these songs are overlooked. And whenever you think of a cover song, you think immediately of America. And then when you think of America, you think of, oh, you know, Steve Howe came in and, you know, he was the one who did this. But no, they were doing this sort of, you know, changing up of the songs in the Peter Banks era. And even before their first record, they were doing this stuff. They had so many covers that they did back then. And then I remember in the biography that we always referenced, that DVD one, that Bill Bruford was there saying himself, that he goes, you know, we've done so many of these covers this way. Why don't we attempt to write our own songs now? Like, since we have such a good idea of how to write these epic covers, why don't we just work our, you know, do our own sort of epic songs? And it worked out well because, and you know what? Here's the thing. I think doing these covers was really important. I mean, sometimes I know that bands, when they start off these original bands, they always frown on doing covers and stuff like that. But I think sometimes it's a good thing to do them, because learning to play a hit song or a classic song or a masterpiece of a song helps you realize, you know, some of the, you know, the things in there that make them so great. And then you, by learning these songs, you can learn those little things and apply it to your own songwriting.
Yes.
Right. So, and I think this is exactly what Yes was doing back at the time, where they were learning these great songs and then adding these little, you know, bits and quirks that they thought of and put it in there, and then realize that they turned this song into something much different than it was originally, and something that they really enjoyed and that the audience enjoyed.
Absolutely. Yes. And it's interesting, isn't it, that Every Little Thing itself is a bit of a deep cut for Beatles. I mean, I hadn't heard the Beatles version of this until long after I heard the Yes version. And I have to say that I do prefer the Yes version. It's,
same here.
Every Little Thing the Beatles version is a good pop song, but they really did take it and do the Yes treatment to it. So it was just absolutely fantastic, and I love that. And it is one of those that I can go back to so many different times and find different bits and different aspects to it than I remember. Okay, then, what's your second choice, Mark?
So my second choice, ironically enough, since we were talking about covers here, was No Opportunity Necessary from the second record.
Ooh, that's mine as well. So yes, yeah, go on, you first.
So we can talk about this together. Yeah. One of the things I found interesting about this song is a comment that Bill Bruford made back in the Yes Years documentary, where he referenced No Opportunity Necessary when they were talking about songwriting and talking about all these different sort of things that they throw into the songwriting, like, you know, the Western influences and country and, you know, all kinds of different things in there. And you can clearly hear that in this song.
Yeah.
They have Peter Banks, especially on the guitar, is really, you know, throwing in the kitchen sink on a few things. That opening bit with the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, it's very, yes, you know, very like, you know, riding into the sunset on horses sort of sounding, right?
Yes, yes.
And, you know, his guitar playing overall on this song, I think, is one of the standout pieces. And it's interesting that it was able to turn out that way, because, as we all know, this is the orchestra, the dreaded orchestra record,
yes,
that drove Peter Banks away from the band because he felt that he was being overshadowed and completely smothered up by the orchestra. But in this song, he was able to, you know, shine on it. I find that there was moments where his guitar was, you know, popping out here and there and was clearly showing the talent and the sort of input that he has in the songwriting. I mean, just listen to the verses, the chord. I mean, the whole song overall is very well structured, very well written. I mean, you know, obviously it's a cover, but they did also put their Yes stamp on it, right?
Yes.
So I definitely think that for guitar playing, this is definitely one that you need to listen to. I mean, of course, again, this song starts off with not a guitar, but it starts off with Tony Kaye's Hammond organ playing, which of course is one of my, you know, favorite things about Yes back in this time period, was the Hammond organ. So putting a Marshall guitar with a Hammond organ is like a masterpiece thinking stroke, in my opinion, because, I mean, a lot of the classic songs have it. I mean, just think of Deep Purple with John Lord and Ritchie Blackmore.
Yes, absolutely. And I was interested because I was listening out for Peter Banks, because that's one of the reasons we're doing this episode. Mm-hmm. And yes, he doesn't come in for a bit, but it does start with that fantastic, epic, I've called it in my notes here, epic Hammond sound from Kaye. And it's just that the absolutely classic Hammond sound, isn't it? It's the you can almost hear the Leslie speaker whirring round when he comes in with that. It's absolutely fantastic. But yes, there's Banks soloing in there. Absolutely brilliant rock and roll type of soloing. And then, yes, I love the way that he plays that Big Country, isn't it? The theme from the Big Country first, yeah. And then the strings blast in and kind of reply to him about halfway through. It's really fantastic. I know some people don't like it, the way that the orchestra is used there with that theme coming in, but I do. It's absolutely brilliant. And I did think that going back to Kay again with that Hammond, it's got some of his sort of best vamping rhythmic Hammond playing of all the work that he did with Yes. I do have to say, though, although I do really like this, yes, you say it's as a Richie Havens original, and I listened to the Richie Havens original, and it's a really nice song, a really good song, but this takes it to a totally different stratosphere, really. But yes, the production, the panning across the stereo sometimes, and when the orchestra second comes in, I think, it's pretty rough, the editing, to be quite frank, particularly with headphones on. Oh, gosh, it's quite rough.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, because even though Eddie Offord did engineer on the album, I mean, clearly Tony Colton, who was the producer, had final say on everything with this. Mm. So, and you know, they even said themselves when they were making this record that this was far from the days of today recording orchestras. You know, they were using what Chris Squire described as, you know, a jacket rack that they put the microphones, that they suspended them off of, right, where they had the microphones hanging off them so that they could get them sort of overhead of the orchestra, because they didn't have any sort of real proper way of miking, at least not in that studio that they were in. Because, you know, when you look at I'm sure you've seen, Kevin, since you work with classical stuff as well so much, that they have these very specialized overhead miking systems for orchestras and for stuff like that, because you can't have it too low, otherwise you're going to blast the microphone and, you know, flip the preamps doing that. So you have to suspend them higher up to get a full sound of the orchestra, plus a bit of the room as well. And back in that time, they just weren't able to do it that way. So, you know, who knows how they did it, because obviously they couldn't have the band playing live with the orchestra. So this is obviously an overdub after the fact. And, you know, maybe there was no click track either to follow. So who knows how it went. So I give them... The fact that the album turned out as good as it did is a testament to not only, you know, Mr. Tony Colton's production work, but obviously, you know, Eddie Offord, who was doing the engineering on there, has to get a bit of a tip of the hat. And of course, this was the album that the Yes guys were impressed with his work on it, that they ended up using him for numerous albums afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, they would have needed to go to somewhere like Abbey Road, wouldn't they? I mean, Abbey Road was specialist with the Beatles, but those large, huge rooms that they had at Abbey Road, the certain studios where you could have fitted in an orchestra and the band, but no, they didn't have access to that kind of thing at the time. Okay, then, that's two each, and one of which was the same. What about your third?
Well, my third one, and I'll be surprised if we have the same third one, but you never know. But the third one for me, I feel, is probably one of my favorite songs, period, that Peter Banks was involved with Yes. I think that this song is the prime example of what he brought to the group. Another example that he wasn't just some, you know, middle-of-the-road guitar player, that he actually had some great technique in his playing, and that some of his guitar playing really stood out. And because of the fact that more current Yes, a la Steve Howe playing, played this song numerous, numerous times, shows how much that he even liked it. And I'm talking about Astral Traveler,
I think. that is what I chose as well.
Oh, did it? Okay, well, there you go.
So, yes, carry on.
So Astral Traveler, of course, is one of these songs that just starts off for once with Peter on guitar, and it fades in with him doing the dan, 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 which is such a great lick that he comes in with. And just to hear that come in, and then that whole section underneath that da, 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 that comes underneath it is so well constructed with their drums and bass are so great with that part. And the one thing that I have to say that impressed me is that whole middle section where they break into that in there. I mean, first of all, you have Tony playing it on keyboards. And that's then the fact that you have Peter Banks doing a sort of lick trade-off with him in there in the middle, and it turns into this fantastic soloing part. I mean, this to me is as good as anything Steve Howe did in a solo. I mean, it has a great feel to it. It has a little bit of classical element in it too.
Yes.
It's not just, you know, brainless rock and roll playing. It's a lot more, you know, constructed, a lot more thought out. And I definitely think that that's why I think it kind of tickled Steve Howe's fancy to say, hey, you know what, when we did, you know, when they were touring with Benoit, you know, they played it during that time, the In the Presence live album. There's a great version of that, but it has the drum solo with Alan White on it in the middle, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this song is definitely a high point in Peter Banks's playing and his recording career. I think that he definitely had, you know, to be very proud of this song, because I really do think that his playing stands out. He in this song, I think, is sort of the standout musician. I mean, I'm curious to hear your reaction to it and what you think of this song.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree more, particularly about that middle section where you have that quasi-classical bit. It's excellent, yes.
Yeah.
And I think this is the song on this album that points the way towards the extensive arrangements that Yes will be famous for in the future after this, because there are so many different sections. There must be four or five different sections in this in this song, including the one that we've just been talking about. But so it's very creative, and I think this was also maybe not the first example, but certainly one of the most important examples where they did do that arrangement. They did the arrangements of other people's songs, but I think this is the first time that they really worked in this kind of extensive arrangement way on one of their own songs. And, you know, it points the way, doesn't it? Because there are so many aspects of it, just like the fact that it's called Astral Traveller and pointing towards Starship Trooper and all those other sort of spacey lyrics and themes that they used. Other things as well, though, in it, which are unusual. Bill Bruford plays mainly toms in it. I mean, he doesn't. I don't think there's any snare drum in it at all. I think it's mainly toms and bass and cymbals. And, you know, this gives it a really unusual feel, which I think works really well with that theme of Astral Traveller. And again, I know people, not everyone does, but I love the effect, the spacey effect on Anderson's voice. It sounds rather like a Leslie Cabinet. I don't know if you know if it is.
Yes,
Mark.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so they just put his voice through the Leslie Cabinet, which is normally on Tony Kaye's Hammond organ, and I think it's a brilliant idea. I mean, it's not the sort of thing that you can do more than once, really. Once you've done it, you've done it.
Yeah.
But I think that really works brilliantly.
Sorry, one thing that I wanted to bring up just before I forget about it was you talk about Bill Bruford playing mainly on toms. Actually, what it is in that verse, for example, when he's doing the singing with the Leslie speaker there, it's actually he's doing a snare roll, but the snare's off, though. He has the snare drum turned off.
Yes, okay.
So it's not really, like, there are toms in there, but snare drum is a snare turned off. That's what that tone is there.
And it gives us a great opportunity to hear those rudiments. So those are the little exercises, aren't they, that you learn when you're learning the drums. And just to go back to also those sort of counter melodies and things and that sort of classical bit in the middle. And there are other examples of that. So towards the beginning, there's a wonderful bit where Tony Kaye and Chris Squire have complementary lines, and they kind of interweave in amongst each other. So yes, I think this is probably one of those songs that Bill Bruford eventually got tired of because he, you know, he used to get fed up with them taking hours and hours and hours to hone every single note of an arrangement and go back over it. And particularly Chris Squire used to annoy him, didn't he? So, and this sounds like it has been worked on so extensively, the arrangement, and, you know, so they tried various different things and then went back and played it again and again and refined it and arranged it. And I do think it's an extremely good way to show where the band were going, even though they didn't, you know, for whatever reason, didn't want Peter Banks to be involved with it anymore. It did show the way that the band wanted to go with Steve Howe coming in. And I do have to mention once again, as we always do when we talk about Time in a Word, the fact that on the US cover of Time in a Word... is Steve Howe and not Peter Banks, because they used a photograph from the most recent, I suppose, photo shoot that they did, which featured Steve Howe and not Peter Banks. And also I watched this week again that wonderful, I think it's Belgian TV promo film, wasn't it, where the band are in driving erratically around in a sort of beach buggy type car. And being very dangerous and almost falling out, and just having such huge amount of fun. And of course that was again Steve Howe having that kind of fun as well with the band. And the last thing I wanted to say, I'm always interested when I get my copy of Yesterday's out. So Yesterday's, if you don't know it, I'm sure you do, but Yesterday's was released in 1974. So that's significantly after this period, really. I mean, that's 4 years later. We're moving on to the time of post-Tales and into Relayer in 1974. But they put this sort of early hits, as it were, record, Yesterday's out. And it's fascinating that with the selection of songs that they put on this. So there are various ones here that we could have chosen. America is here. That's a bit later than we're talking about today, of course, because that does indeed feature Steve Howe, as we said earlier. Looking Around, which has gone right back to the first album there. Time and a Word, another great song, which I like very much. Sweet Dreams. So that's the very short first side of Yesterday's. And side two, Then, which I like that song, but it does seem odd to put that on a kind of greatest hits album. Survival, again. Okay, yeah, I like it a lot, but should it really be on here? I don't know. Astral Traveller, hey, and Dear Father, which is the one they put on, which had never been released on record before that. So fascinating. I mean, that's what they themselves put out, but goodness knows what the process was of deciding on those songs for that album. But I always think it's interesting to have a look at that running order for Yesterday's.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting sort of record. I mean, I like you said, the selection of songs is sort of odd in there. Like, you would have thought that there would have been some other, you know, songs that were stronger or, you know, better received than some of those songs. But, you know, I guess they had their reasons for it. I mean, it's interesting. I'm reading on here on the wiki thing here. It says that a cover of the compilation album Yesterday was painted by Roger Dean, which was released in America, was an homage to the cover of the album Time and a Word. It featured a nude woman in the same pose with her head not being visible, but with a black butterfly on her hip, just as on Time and a Word.
That's right, yeah.
So it's interesting that they did make that sort of reference in there, because as we know, that the cover didn't last very long because they didn't want it in America.
No, right? No, that's
that
right.
And it was only a UK version has that on it as well. And, you know, it's interesting that you brought up Dear Father, that was brought up on there, because that's a song. It's one of those songs where they clearly liked the song, but were never satisfied with it, because on the bonus tracks for the debut record, there's a version of Dear Father on there as well. And then on this one, in the bonus tracks, there's another single B-side version of Dear Father. And I know when I read somewhere on one of these various books and stuff that I've read about, yes, that these are not the same version. Some of these were re-recorded versions. They tried it several times and it just never made it on a record proper until it appeared on the German version of Time and a Word, where they replaced, I think it was, The Prophet for Dear Father on the German pressing.
Yes, yes. Oh, it's fascinating, isn't it? We really are getting into the weeds now, which is exactly what we like.
Yes.
Okay, so we were aiming for six songs. In fact, we ended up with only four, I think. One, two, three, four, yes. But that's okay. That's okay. It means that we're thinking alike, but not everybody will agree with us, of course. So do have your say on the show notes for this week. Peter Banks era songs. What are your favourite three or four or however many you like, really? But yes, it is one of my favourite things to do, go right back to the beginning of the band and to think about Peter Banks and what he added to the mix. And as we've said today, one of the big themes that we've come out with today is looking forward from those initial two albums to what the band would become, and always fascinating to look for the origins of that style in these first two albums. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
6. Andred. Yes. Music. 6. Andred. Yes.
Yes Music Podcast. 600 episodes.
Just before we go, here are the YMP producers and half the patrons. Yes Music Podcast producers are Joseph Cottrell, Ken Fuller and Jeffrey Cresselius. And half the Yes Music Podcast patrons are Jim Morrison, John Pickles, Declan Logg, Gary Betts, Aaron Steelman, Michael Handahan, Barry Gorski, Steve Perry, Doug Curran, Martin Kaelberg, Todd Dudley, Rachel Hadaway, Lind, Paul Hales, Craig Estenis, Mark James Lang, Steve Rode, David, Bob Martellotta, John Holden, Stephen Lamb, Dem, Fred Barringer, Scott Colombo, Chris Bandini, David Hayden, and John Thompson. Continued thanks to all those patrons. If you'd like to join them in helping keep the lights on here financially at YMP Towers, then please do head over to Patreon, patreon.com/YesMusicPodcast, or just click the link on any post on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We do hope to be back next week. In the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via X, Facebook or Instagram. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.